Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yo, that's a fact. In my cool as a cucumber, 72 degrees, climate controlled studio. That's where I am.
I had to turn off the AC because it was just getting so freezing in here.
And it's nice
meanwhile,
and
Justin Robert Young, somewhere in Philadelphia, I believe.
Yep, for in the shadows of Citizens Bank Field, walking our way to the Democratic National Convention Press Center.
Yeah, so if it makes you feel better, like, Justin's a war correspondent on the moon. Like, if that's about as foreign as the outside world is to us.
Yeah, at least on the moon, though, he'd be climate controlled.
That's true. Good point.
Well, gentlemen, it happened. Finally. They laughed at us. They made fun of us. They ridiculed us, all the other podcasts. We were the source of scorn. I mean, sure, we are an award-winning podcast. They belittled us. They made fun of us. They called us names in my head, and we carried on. We were persistent. We didn't stop. We knew there was a story there. We knew there was something there. And call us fools, idiots, what other impolite, incorrect terms you want to. It didn't stop us.
No, because we're great and we tried real hard when we did that. Justin, you remember how hard we persevered on that thing?
Oh, man. I remember the blood, sweat, and tears. Never before had we ever done a thing like that.
Yeah. Well, that's what's great about us.
That thing I speak of, which you guys obviously already are way ahead of me on, is our coverage of Goblin News. You can't count on the media does not give you the full story, people. Okay.
No.
Noam Chomsky is actually working on an entire book talking about why the media won't talk about goblins.
Yeah, man. I say, when it comes to goblins, I say, wake up, Gleeple. they're abusing you.
This media blackout about Goblin News is infuriating in some ways. It's just part of the global conspiracy. But we're the ones, we've persisted, and we've gotten subtle clues that, no, desist. You know, like when, I don't know, our subscribers to our Patreon drop. It's really the man talking to us, telling us to stop covering Goblin News. But no, we know there's a story there. And finally, guys, finally, concrete evidence. That's been always the problem, is we've had these accounts.
Do we finally have the smoking goblin gun?
Brian, we've got as much proof as you could ever hope for. We've got conclusive proof. Finally, we've got video. We've got sound.
All right. In my mind, time out on everything. All I want is to cut to a live tape of CNN with a interview with Gleeble Glog, the goblin from the one who's finally crossed over to the human side, but
he's,
I guess, not
a really strong third party.
Yes, exactly.
So we've got video, we've got sound. What would you like to hear? The sound of a goblin?
Yes.
Would you like to see a goblin?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't see the goblin, but you can see a person possessed by a goblin.
See,
a woman in the Philippines has apparently been possessed by a goblin, and they tried to do an exorcism. And when you this is the headline, like, listen to the chilling voice of a goblin. I'm like, I gotta hear this goblin voice. So I've listened to the whole thing.
All right, take it away,
all right,
Bryce.
Let's go. Come on. Let's go.
Kinyo, mangkwakwakwanan, ha? Si kwanto anima sa tularang pawilon, ha? Ha?
The goblin's about to come.
Ha? Siupa ka?
Si Biling.
Ha? Bawang ilang!
Ha?
Bawang ilang!
Ha? Sige!
Come on, Michigan J Frog, make with it.
Yeah, right? Hurry up.
Get ready.
Oh, geez, that's chilling.
That's the goblin voice.
All right. So
it doesn't get any better.
I
kept waiting for a chilling goblin voice.
Man.
So yet
still unknown. We can't put a finger on it.
I mean, here's the thing, right? I don't want to undercut the like, you can tell that there's something very chilling happening in the room for everybody there, right? Like, there's something about live performance that makes you feel like you're a part of something. And if you're not live, then a live concert album doesn't have the same zing, does it?
Well, you know, I was expecting maybe, like, it would sound like a poo from The Simpsons or, like, you know, some kind of... Like,
you wanted the goblins to have even more racial stereotype problems.
I mean, you're a goblin. Like, who's going to tell you that that's politically incorrect?
You hear these stories where they talk about, like, you know, oh, and that we really heard this very, very chilling voice, and you're like, man, I want to know what that's like when you hear that. And then every account I've ever heard, I've never heard somebody do a voice that didn't sound like them doing a voice.
Yeah.
Or at least if they wanted to do a voice, they could, right?
Yeah.
Like, if they're like, "Arm the goblin," like, you know, it would just
like sound like maybe it would sound. Maybe at its most impressive, you're like, "Oh, I didn't know you could do a Kentucky accent. That's amazing." That was really impressive.
That would
impressive.
Be great if they were just all Colonel Sanders, like, all. Well, here with my goblin coven, we make our chicken with 13 original herbs and spices.
That's Rick and Morty.
That would be great if it was just all of like the Justin Roiland voices that all kind of sound alike but are different enough that you can believe they're different characters.
Dude, I do believe there's a goblin in that guy. That's a fact.
I mean, there is one other media outlet that is very, very, very on top of the goblin crisis.
Yeah, you're talking about Pravda?
Well, no. I mean, it was kind of recent, and here, since we are covering politics, Bryce, if you could just Google Alex Jones goblin vine.
Oh, it'll just be...
Goblin's nest, kissing goblins, goblin vomit, catch him in bed with a goblin. Trump charging into a goblin's nest, kissing goblins, goblin vomit, catch him in
wait,
bed.
Wait, whoa, hold on. Is Alex Jones, my neighbor just up the road, is he trying to shoehorn his way into our goblin territory?
Listen, I'm just saying, I think he again, we will be sharing a city yet again, me and Mr. Jones. And it won't be as friendly as the Counting Crows song. You know, if we come into contact, I'm going to let him know that we're not going to get our corner taken on this goblin business.
Wow, you just managed to throw in The Wire and Counting Crows in one delightfully mashed up statement.
Listen, Brian, it's amazing what's possible when heat strokes in play.
When heat strokes in play. Hey, speaking of which, can we finally get back to our story of life on the road? I feel like you're method acting, Justin. I feel like when last we discussed our scenario, the world had appeared to pretty much end. 99.9%, you know, only 1 in 1,000 of survivors. And you and I miraculously ended up connecting in Austin, Texas. After establishing that we had food, water, and a bit of supplies, we made the momentous decision to head out west, to travel along I-10 in some kind of battle van out to try to see if, just by luck, Andrew Main happened to be one of the surviving survivors.
Yeah, and on your way, of course, to go, like, check on Justin's wife.
Check on Ashley and Andrew. Well, our story starts when I wake up getting ready for our adventure. I hit my head on the side of a concrete wall and pass out for 4 minutes while I get through security.
Wait, what?
And then
he disconnected.
No, he ran into a concrete wall and fell asleep for about 4 minutes.
Oh, got it. So he has to get through security. I get it. Okay, so Justin's cashed out.
So Brian, you're driving. Justin's asleep on the side. You chose a vehicle, correct?
Yeah, I like the.
You went with like a Mad Maxi sort of idea. At first.
No, I was talking about like bicycles and nonsense, but it sounds like the highways are fairly open. So I don't think you quite want a full on, like, I guess it does have to be a diesel vehicle. I'm figuring one of those tour vans, not quite a full bus, but a tour van, something that's got a PlayStation in it.
Another reason too is like bicycles, if you're trying to be stealthy around zombies, are great. But if you're riding on open roads and you're afraid of, you know, snipers and roadblocks,
you want stuff between you and those bullets, right?
I mean, there was that celebrated German bicycle Panzer Division.
Well, okay, so we heavily armor a tour van. I don't want to go full tour bus. It's a tour van, and we're driving. Now, when we get started, I guess we're going to intersect essentially one of the two or three main East Coast, West Coast arteries. We're going to take Interstate 10, which takes you through El Paso,
You haven't reached El Paso yet. You're taking Interstate 10. You're heading there. You're past, like, I know, Van Horn or what. Actually, Van Horn actually made a version of that in my book, Station Breaker, as a town. So you're driving.
By the way, real quick, we stop and I spit out the window at Fort Stockton for giving Jay a ticket 20 years ago. And then also I weep silently knowing that my brother is dead along with everyone I ever cared for.
Including the person who gave him a ticket. Yeah. So here's what I want you first. Describe to us your van. Have you done anything to it? Have you customized this?
Oh, yeah. No. Okay. Assuming we've got time, and it sounds like we've got nothing but time and resources on our hands. I would imagine we armor plate the whole thing. You were saying diesel sticks around a while, right?
Yeah, I mean, diesel's a pretty reliable sort of fuel as far as, you know, being able to have it remains, you know,
it doesn't evaporate and dissipate the way unleaded does. Okay.
I wouldn't go too crazy. I think you're going to be fine for the next year or so.
Yeah. You know? Well, and in fact, it's possible to run a diesel engine vehicle on vegetable oil. Like once the engine is primed and running. So it's like, it's pretty negotiable on what kind of fuel you use.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we take that, we armor it the hell out. I'm thinking full on Mad Max, right? This big beefy van. We get a few guns, figure a sniper rifle, some shotguns.
Do you build like do you have like little slots and stuff so you can shoot out of it?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is cover up all the windows and just put slots in there because that's something I know how to do, right? And the other thing is, like, you know, since we can't rely on the AC and stuff to work forever, you know, hopefully I'm thinking all that mass will act as a little bit of thermal insulation, both from heat and cold, wherever we take it.
It's going to be an oven, Brian, let's be honest.
I mean, you know, once you're going 70 miles an hour, assuming we make it up to 70, should get some good airflow.
I would put some AC in there.
Wait. I wrapped the whole thing in aluminum foil just in case.
Oh my God.
Just hoping.
I just woke up. Oh, jeez, what happened?
Oh, dude, I put together, I armored up. You remember, we went down south to San Marcos where they sell RV vans because we had that whole discussion about how I didn't want to get a full-on tour bus because I was worried about maneuverability. So we settled on an RV van, right? And so I totally covered it in armor. It's got these slits that we can shoot stuff out of. I was just about to provision the vehicle, and I'm so glad you woke up. What should we provide in here?
Well, we're going to need foodstuffs.
Yep.
So, I like the idea that Brian put a vending machine in there and is charging Justin money to use it.
But I go through the bother of minting my own Brian Buck's currency, and it's like I'm pedantic about this when it's like every time he says he calls them dollars, I'm like, Brian Buck's, they're Brian Buck's. This is the new world.
Yeah.
Nobody's minting currency. It's up to me, Brian Buck's.
And then you went and raised the price of Dr. Pepper because, you know, it's the only soda I like. You know, everything else is free.
And I'm like, it's called splurge pricing. That's a new word that I made up.
Yeah, hey, listen, man, free market. This is just what happens. Supply and demand, buddy.
And then I turn and I say,
turns out this apocalypse didn't kill the invisible hand, bitch.
Yeah, right? I was like, before I give you anything, I say, first you have to pray to Milton Friedman and thank him for the apocalypse, in which my anarcho-capitalist society is complete.
Now, when you're building this, you would remember a conversation that you had with me, and I made some suggestions just as a thought to think about.
Sure. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, let me turn my mind back right now and remember what you were saying.
We're sitting around a campfire, and I'm like, Brian, you know, apocalypse will never happen, but if it did happen, one, you guys need to come get me, and two, if you're to build a vehicle, there's some suggestions.
Yeah.
Your roof rack. Build a roof rack. Think about those safari vehicles in Africa where you can put a bunch of fuel cans on top. You can put a generator on top too. So if you wanted a power, if you wanted to keep some stuff cold, you want to have a refrigerator, like, you know, nice cold, icy cold one. Nobody's going to stop you for your DOI in apocalypse.
Ooh, yeah. That's the takeaway. Nobody can stop you for DUI.
And you just said that, and in my head, it was just Van Halen's Beautiful Girls opening riff. Like, like this is going to be the best.
Road trip.
So you're against the AC. I'm like, no, you're going to have AC. You're going to have a chiller. You're going to have a refrigerator in there. Put a generator on top too, so you can have extra fuel cans. Put all that stuff. Think of like African safari. Think of the vehicles, how you use all that roof space.
Dude, on our way, we are headed out west. We're into that 85 mile an hour territory where it's like, I assume, no traffic, just you know, sagebrush as far as the eye can see, that wide open Texas highway.
You've got maybe some buggy whip antennas. Maybe you've got a bunch of radio stations tuned. You know, you have like maybe four or five radio stations open at the same time.
Oh, because we're broadcasting, right?
You're listening. No, you're listening.
Yeah, I think we're also broadcasting. I think in fact, while we're driving, we're taking turns being the world's only DJ.
Jack Burton.
Yeah, exactly.
Express.
Dibs on afternoon drive. I'm not trying to
make damn it. I told you I want a drive time.
Cut. No. Well, yeah, you can get morning drive time. Don't worry, Howard Stern. Go ahead.
All right, fine.
Ply your trade at 5:30.
While Justin sleeps, I wake up and I do 5 minutes on my slightly soupy diarrhea about how I'm victimized, even though I'm literally the only remaining vestige of early morning radio.
All right, so let's talk about this. So what are you doing for your bathroom breaks?
I mean, I'm thinking just side of the road, right? I mean, is there any – ain't no reason to hold on to none of that.
I mean, there's still wild animals and stuff out there, but
– Well, yeah, but we're not even like – like, that would be a factor if we were building a village or something, okay. You know.
But I would have a box of adult diapers there just in case.
Of box of what?
Adult diapers, you know.
Oh, wait, you're, okay.
It's, I mean, you never know when you might get trapped.
Did the apocalypse also take out all the buckets?
Yeah, and all the Dr. Pepper plastic bottles. Hey, man, we were promised by the environmentalists that these would be around for thousands of years.
So, are you guys going to be, you know, sleeping in shifts? Or are you just going to keep like nonstop driving?
Oh yeah, no. It's. I mean, I've done long distance driving and stuff before. Like, we can each flip and. Who's ever sleeping isn't driving, and vice versa.
Yeah, but the one thing that's weird is how because we have the one radio station, we make the other one promise that they're definitely going in the back to listen, even though secretly we know they're not listening to the program at all. But then when they wake up again, they're all like, "No, it was great that bit you were doing, ha, hilarious!" And the guy's like, "Yeah, right."
And no, I feel like it's getting tighter every day. Every day we try that.
Oh, man, we're finding that voice. We're finding the voice of the whole station. Think about it, man. We can franchise this stuff. As soon as we find other living individuals, this is going to be huge.
I like the idea that you guys are somewhere near, I don't know, we'll say Comfort or some of these small towns there, like a little three-street small town. And you're like, hey, You guys carry guns? Are you packing, by the way, when you walk around?
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, first of all, we very rarely get out of this thing. Like, we stop we stop for two things. We stop at all of the Dairy Queens, and we stop at the fuel stops.
Okay. So, but you're packing. What are you packing?
I mean, Justin's a weird one because he's got this, I call it a short sword. He didn't like it. He says it's an extra long machete, but he's a big fan of it.
Not really. What would you really...
I have a gun.
Yes. This is actually an important consideration under the rules that we are playing in this universe. I'm going to say it's not the best ammo, but I'm going to say you would base everything on 9mm just because that will be the most abundant supply if you want to live off the land.
Okay. So what's your everyday carry? When you step outside Battle Van, you need to come up with a name.
Actually, you know what? I take that back. I'm going to do like a snub-nosed 45. Mm-hmm. A revolver for close quarters. I will keep a blade on me at all time. And I guess just a straight up like deer hunting rifle, something with a lot of penetration. Mm-hmm. That and precise. Ah, but I don't know how precise the sighting is going to remain.
I would be torn. I mean, I would have a sidearm. I'd probably use a magazine-based pistol so I can reload pretty quickly, because the problem with the revolver is trying to do a speed load on that. But each one's your choice.
Well, I guess specifically I'm thinking the revolver because it's a simple design. And here's one of the weird things is if this apocalypse happened in the 1980s, we would be better equipped to weather it because we would all of the data, all of the knowledge would still just be in books that are precisely categorized in the library. Whereas nowadays we rely on everything being digital, and I'm just assuming all that kind of stops working as the servers fail and power goes out and so on.
So let's say pistol, you're going to go for like a hunting rifle. I'm torn between a hunting rifle or a shotgun myself. The advantage of a shotgun is you don't have to be as precise.
Yes, but you don't have the distance. That's all
exactly.
close quarters.
And that's the advantage of your rifle is that if you're in a small town and somebody's taking pop shots at you.
I'm going to say the moment we step outside, I've got a hunting rifle slung over my back and a sidearm and a blade. But meanwhile, inside the van is nothing but shotguns. Like, that's all. If they come at us, we are prepared with blunderbusses, basically.
And Justin's armed with his wit and a ball gag. So at some point you guys stop at a town and you're both like, hey, I'm going to go get something. All right, I'll be cool. I'm going to get something too. And you're like, all right, I'll be back here in 15 minutes. You got like air horn sirens, you know, each carry one of those, right? Yeah.
So here's how far
we're leaving each other's company.
No, that's not happening. Well,
and then, but you like you do. And then like you both meet each other in the XXX section of the video store.
Oh, that's awkward.
You're like, I got to go get something. All right, cool. Wait, what are you doing back there? I thought you were listening to my radio show.
By the way, for the record, and I'm so sad that the window's closing on adult bookstores as the internet has made pornography available to everyone. But I always thought, like, for truckers, there should be a giant sign that says, get off, next exit. And no, just me? All right.
My friends Peter and Isabel walked in just at this time. Perfect. You guys look great.
Awesome.
Have fun at the wedding. Legit.
So at any point as we head west, do we ever see any other people? Have we encountered anyone?
We're getting to that. This journey's just begun, Bri.
Okay, good. All right.
So now that we know, we need a name for the vehicle, and I want our fans out there, our listeners, to suggest a name for what this vehicle should be called, what Justin and Brian have embarked upon, maybe a name for whatever radio show that they're continuously doing on every channel they can.
No, dude, it's got to be Shai Hulud.
We're going to talk about next week because, Brian, Justin, you guys are driving along and you see a solitary figure clothed in black walking along the road with their thumb out.
All right.
Oh, I hope that they're a puppeteer.
I don't know what that means.
You know where, like, they do those puppet things where they dress all in black? And then, like, they turn on the lights.
Got it. Turns out it's a member of a Japanese puppetry theater company. Got it.
Yeah.
All right.
No.
Next week, we'll find out what happens.
Wow, this is, I'm excited. I don't know where this is going.
I mean, we're going west to pick up Andrew.
Well, all right. Come on, Weisenheimer. Why don't you get off next exit?
We've got another topic before we jump into that topic. We got a big topic out to talk about my voice training. We need your help out there, listeners. We need your support.
Yes. Look, man, Weird Things is only made possible by the fantastic donations of people who dig our bizarre storytelling. If you get a smile, if you enjoy hearing about the weird news out there, if you want to hear us grouse about Alex Jones stealing our goblin thunder, then we need your support. Please, please, please head on over to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/weirdthings and sign up. Join the ranks of the proud. We'd love it if we got up to 500 patrons keeping us loud, live, and independent.
All up to you. So, talking about big plans, dreaming big, big ambitions. I'm going to say his name and invoke his name. Got some Elon Musk news.
Oh, yeah. Dude, there was some article I ran across talking about how SpaceX will never, ever have an IPO. That the market is inherently too adverse to the long-term thinking that it takes to run a rocket company. And I was like, man, I don't know if I believe it. I think they will do an IPO, and I think then I would love to give them some money and own a piece of space.
Yeah, that's a discussion for another time. And there's Elon Musk has written a very interesting letter on, you know, to like, because part of the reason you do an IPO though is to reward all of your employees, because if right. they have stock, and they do have stock in the company, at some point they want to know that there are sort of their private markets which you can trade certain within the capacity, but you know the real valuation isn't coming until you have an IPO. So one of the pressures for an IPO is for that. But if you are able to supplement that with dividends or something, so I don't know. But let's talk about what he talked about with Tesla.
This is his manifesto that he wrote. Manifesto
this
part
is,
two.
This is the art of storytelling part two.
The Elon Musk issued his big plan part two. Let me see if I can pull this up here.
From what I heard, I never read the first part. I didn't read the second part because I didn't want to be lost on the story because I didn't want to watch the sequel first and then, you know, not know what happened in the original. What happened in his original manifesto? Because apparently he seems to feel like he's already realized all of his dreams and wants to make new ones.
Because he spells out his first manifesto in like 8 words at the beginning of the second manifesto. He basically says the first manifesto was build a very expensive car.
One, create a low-volume car which would necessarily be expensive, which was the Tesla Roadster. Step two, use that money to develop a medium-volume car at a lower price, which is the Model S.
Mm-hmm.
Three, use that money to create an affordable high-volume car, which would be the Model 3. Four, provide solar power. And so this has been a big part of what they want to do. And that's why he's been an investor in Solar City, which is Cousin's own. And now they're planning to acquire Solar City and fold that into Tesla. So Solar City is the largest installer of solar panels in the United States. And they're looking to gear up and start building their own factories. And Elon wants to tie all that together in their own power system. So that was part one. That was his first plan, right? Now he's moved on. And it's worth reading. If you go to TeslaMotors.com and you click on updates, you can read about this. And he gets into sort of the plan is – this is the, in short, master plan part two. He actually says part two, like hot shots. And he writes it as this. Create stunning solar roofs with seamlessly integrated battery storage. He means for homes. I read some like tech blogger who was like, oh, for cars? It's like, no, it's not a battery juice. Turn in your card. You cannot talk about tech ever again. Two, expand the electric vehicle product line to address all major segments. So he doesn't just want to make the Model 3. He says they want to do a pickup truck. He says they're working actually on a tractor, like a semi. They actually want to do an electric semi to be able to pull, because he wants to be able to control, you know, do all aspects of transportation. They're working on a bus. He says that they have an idea for kind of a smaller sort of bus where people can get on and off faster. You put it into a city, and if somebody's at a bus stop, they press a button and a bus shows up. If you need to go to some other location, it will take you to that location. So he's got very ambitious ideas for self-driving buses that Tesla wants to make. And four, which is, well, he says number three was develop a self-driving capability that's 10 times safer than a manual versus massive via than manual.
And he that wants to does not seem terribly challenging to me. Like, I mean, we kill so many people.
Boring.
No. I mean, but what I mean by that, like, that sounds like a bombastic, high-minded claim, and people are like, oh, well, how's it going to tell the difference between a police officer flagging you down versus a hitchhiker or whatever? All of those are like, how about this? Let's just have perfect reaction time and stop running over people who are in the highway or whatever. I mean, all the dumb ways that distracted driving kills 30-plus thousand people in America every single year.
Yeah, so, you know, they obviously, I mean, given that we'll still have the reports, there has been already a fatality with the beta version of self-driving. So statistically speaking, you know, it's going to be a little while longer, but more of these Teslas on the roads as they increase the capability they have – all these Tesla vehicles are providing data to help them improve that. And he says they'll take beta. He'll no longer call it beta when they reach that 10 times level.
Okay? Right.
So that's a big goal. Then the other thing he said, which is this is something I've been dismissive of. I'm like, I don't see this happening. I don't think they'll do this. And Musk has come right out and said that this is a plan, is that when you're done with your car, you know, you're sitting at home and you're done, you can press a button and you could turn your car into a Uber type car, you know, basically a ride sharing car.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant, give me the most pessimistic version of the case that you can make on this, because for which part for the sharing part for farming out your Uber.
So
I think that's something where, you know, even more so than the buses, which you can put on kind of a short track because you already have routes for stuff and you can, you know, make allowances for a self-driving municipal city bus or even a private bus, the idea of a self-driving Uber type of vehicle will be reliant on more and more regulation. You know, we're pretty much at the outer ends. Like, you would have just regular self-driving cars, I think, before you would have regular self-driving Uber cars.
Well, so let's start with a version of this that we could do literally tomorrow. Why not have an app that is Uber, and you just provide the cars, and somebody who lives downtown, because all the cars go out to the suburbs at night, and then, but in the morning, they all come back into town, nobody wants to park, and let's say, for sake of discussion, there's a bunch of people who would love to drive, but don't own a car. Like, you can already half do it with people. I guess your hesitation is technological, is that what it is?
No, my hesitation is legal.
Brian, as a citizen of Austin, tell us.
but I feel like Austin's kicking out the Uber and Lyft. Not even kicking it out. I don't know. I feel like that's an outlier. I'm not so much worried about the legal side of things, because there are already people, like, when somebody drives a cab, they don't own the cab. Some other institution owns the cab.
Oh, yeah. No. My issue isn't the ride sharing part, or even that somebody would have the instinct to want to just put their car out into the wilderness. My thing is just that, like, it will, that is a subdivision of, we have self-driving cars on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is something that's still is a little ways off in terms of it just being allowed, like, you know, just clearing the legal hurdles. I think that we will have the tech for it, I mean, at an aggressive pace, 5 to 10 years before we actually see them out on the road in a capacity that people want to be like, oh yeah, and now let's also do Uber with them.
I guess I got to disagree. I think the second the tech becomes possible, we start doing it, because the only part of your description that I really can't reconcile my mind is the part where they solve the technology part, and then for 5 to 10 years, we just shrug and deal with incredible congestion, highways overcrowded, everybody complaining, parking being a problem, and all that stuff. It just seems like the moment we have the technological capacity, somebody will figure out a way to flip that instantly.
I just don't see legislatures acting that fast, though. I think that's the problem, is that the will can be there, and even politicians could say, yes, we need to do this, but there are so many things between, you know, Department of Transportation, highways, local municipalities, you know, national highway boards, all these other things that have to, that kind of inertia is so, you know, we can know like, oh, we need to do this, but also in their vested interests that don't want that to happen. You know, you don't want, you know, as you know, we've talked about this before. We called it on this show that insurers may have a problem with self-driving cars because as fewer people have cars, fewer people need to pay for higher, higher ticket policies for protection. You know, and that's now we've seen some pushback from the insurance industry about this, and there's concerns within there about this, about the fact that if we start shifting more and more people giving up car ownership, that that's going to have a material impact on them.
We had an email from an insurance agent that said, yeah, no, this is like a known major issue like on the horizon for our business. And listen, like considering I'm here at the Democratic National Convention, I'm not in the business of arguing with entrenched unions that don't want to see things like changed and entrenched organizations that have political influence. But I think, I mean, maybe theoretically something like that would stand in the way.
Well, and I guess I don't know. The only other thing I could throw out there is the fact that right now, none of this is virtually none of this is specifically prohibited by law. And so what you're saying is not that it'll take a long time to lobby for and get laws passed that explicitly give permission to do things. What you guys are saying is that they will predictively figure out what people are going to try to do and make sure to put laws out prohibiting it beforehand.
We've already seen it, right? Wasn't it Nevada Nevada was the was
California.
Nevada was the worst. They explicitly said the reverse. Yeah, they explicitly said please bring all of your robot cars.
Yeah, no, no.
Well,
California.
No, but in California. California, yeah. Google wanted to say, hey, can we insure, can we make it if anybody's in our car, can we just make, we'll be the insurer for that. We'll take care of that. When they passed the automated driving regulations, they specifically said, nope, individuals have to have their own policies. And why did that happen? That was insurance companies.
A very, very wise person once said to me, technology outpaces legislation. And
in the long run.
Yes, I'm going to say that the technology all legislation could do is lean on what lawmakers can predict people will do with the technology. Well, what they actually do with the technology will happen much, much faster and by definition be much more unexpected than whatever laws are pre-written to ban different things.
Yeah, but Brian, if you cracked all the things you need to do to make self-driving completely work door to door and you announced it right now, not legal. That's the problem, is you cannot put another passenger into that vehicle and not have them near the steering wheel. You know, the technology would be there, but the laws would say, nope, not gonna happen, and there are gonna be interests that are going to
not even worried about it. Like right now, what you do is you just stick 16-year-olds in all of those driver's seats. You explain to them that they can sit there and tinker around playing Pokemon Go, catch them all, and make slightly better than minimum wage to do it. And you keep that vestige as long as it takes. You know, you have that fig leaf of there's a person there until you don't need to anymore.
We've done a million versions of this argument, and I don't think that we're really all that far off. But I think unless Andrew has another wrinkle on it, but you asked what's the most pessimistic you could take on it, and that was my answer. The most pessimistic is that I just think this happens after there are widespread self-driving cars for personal use, because I do think that, you know, Uber is a subsection of people personally owning cars.
Yeah.
And that is something that we'll need to, as our, you know, political system is currently set up and where the carrots and sticks lay politically, which is always subject to change, you know, I mean, and who knows whether or not, you know, Uber, instead of knife fighting with city councils, eventually just starts looking to, you know, pour a ton of money into K Street and start lobbying things federally. And you know, that's something that could definitely put this into play a lot more.
I want to address it, though. In your situation, Brian, your solution is, well, just put a low-paid human in back of the wheel. Well, that's what Uber is. You know, I mean, that's what we have that. The thing where I have a car and I press a button and I don't have to go hire somebody to go take my car around to collect fares, I'm saying to get to that point, that version, if That ain't going to happen while, you know, in their present legal system.
Okay. I think from here on out, all we have is the same territory to go over again. I am much more optimistic. I think that I think that people pivot much, much quicker opinions.
I hope the case is like you will get certain states and stuff and places will, you know, be much more forward thinking about that. And I think that that's what it'll – I think it happens – and it's, you know, big, you know, another argument for, you know, the power of states is that, you know, you get a state that wants to be very forward with this and let them be the experimental thing. And I think if that happens, then it becomes like, yes, it worked there. And it's so easy to be dismissive to say, no, it won't work. Why don't we try it? Nope. Cost of human life. We can't risk the robots doing that. And then you have the wrong – you have the total opposite version of the precautionary principle, which, you know, we've talked about before, where actually more people die because you won't do a thing.
Yeah,
and it's just, you know, the reason to be inert.
Dude, absolutely.
I do think that we are totally on the same page on where it is eventually going. You know, I think that it is at this point, barring, you know, evidence that we have yet unseen, something that is coming. It's a matter of the exact implementation of it and, you know, when it actually comes to pass. Because also, who knows at the point where this is a thing, you know, what the needs of people are in terms of that, you know? Like that stuff does change over time. And, you know, we are certainly in a period of disruption for what it means to own a vehicle. I mean, I'm at the point where now it costs me more just to have a car than not because of where I am. And you know, if I just Uber to the airport and take BART all over the place, then that's just, you know, it just makes sense. And I think that is more of a reality in cities that aren't New York City or Chicago or Boston, where public transportation is a regular thing in the States now more than ever. So who knows?
So one quick question before we wrap up the Musk manifesto. Was there significant talk in there about what the plan is to because solar energy is yes, it's cheap, abundant, it's all over the place, or I guess the energy itself is raining down from the skies, but the problem is not the ability to capture it and convert it into electricity. The problem is with battery, with storage, basically. Like, is there any solutions or benchmarks?
That's the Powerwall. That's the Powerwall. That's was part of the whole plan, is the idea they have Tesla.
So it doesn't outline or predict or rely upon new battery technology, because those power walls are just lithium ion, right?
Well, but I mean, lithium ion is a catch-all phrase that describes many, many, many different chemistries, and there. So, you know, a Tesla lithium ion battery is going to be radically different than the one in your iPad, and so.
But we're not talking. We're not talking 10x different. We're talking
not 10x different, but yeah. They've increased their efficiencies considerably when they first came out, though.
Right.
So, it's for him to base it on a technology that we don't have, like some graphene based thing or something like that, would not probably be, you know, prudent.
I guess just sort of radiating out. Just as you guys are less than optimistic about the ability of the legal framework to have cars driving around on their own, I am very pessimistic about iterative battery transformations happening. It seems like we need a massive change in how we do batteries, and you know, a technology like the liquid metal batteries, where it's super hot and you got lava basically.
There's a lot of interesting ideas, you know, out there that are coming. But I mean, if you take a look at how much batteries have advanced, I mean, the reason we talk about drones now is that we came up with batteries that were light enough and powerful enough to actually lift themselves with electric motors. That was not possible with a battery 10 years ago in that capacity. And so there's been a lot of improvement. It's been incremental, and we haven't had this sort of big, huge phase change. We're like, oh my God, but you look at the amount of energy we get out of a lithium, you know, new modern lithium ion chemistries versus 10 years ago, it's changed. Like, yeah, I don't think we need we can have a wonderful incremental step using, you know, the current state-of-the-art lithium-ion batteries and power walls. And if you live in a place with a lot of sunlight, you're not quite at the point where it makes more sense than buying your electric. But within 10 years, yeah, you know, we're going to reach that. You know, I think it's like 2025, 2027 or something like that's probably the break-even point where, you know, solar is as cheap as conventional electric.
Well, that's good.
But yeah, absolutely, Brian. Storage is still an issue with that. And you also have, again, so where I live in Florida, where I have my house, I'm, you know, here most of the time, but in Florida, I can't have electric panels put on my roof without going through my power company and using one of their licensed, whatever official ways to do that. And they make it so difficult to do that, because the law, the government passed laws that basically said that they can't really have, you can't have, like, really third parties can't go sell you this sort of stuff. It all has to go through the power company.
Wow, that's crazy.
Man, how does that happen? That doesn't seem like a man. That's,
well,
I mean,
it's that's the trade-off.
In Florida, I'm shocked that it doesn't also come with you having to buy a pound of sugar.
Yes. Yeah. It's just, you know, exactly that. Is it, you know, it comes in because of, you know, you have this monopoly that has enough control and is able to sort of say, you know, hey, you know, they pass it through the idea of like, oh, we have this new solar initiative. We're going to increase, you know, like, you know, we're going to help you do this sort of thing. And then part of that is the caveat is like, yeah, you know, make the integrity of our grid. You know, we got to make sure that, you know, we can't have, we don't want to have bad stuff there, you know.
In the chat room, somebody was saying, you know, or Jolt Mom was saying, why not a power grid where the sunny parts of the planet can provide power to the cloudy areas? I think the energy transmission or the loss, the resistance from point A to point B, I don't think that's possible, right?
Well, I mean, we do to an extent. We have, like, power grids in the West Coast and the East Coast, you know, they go back and forth. But yeah, there's a point at which after you're trying to transmit it a certain amount of distance, then yeah, it becomes problematic. And there are a lot of different energy sources where, you know, different places you go to, you know, and you're closer towards the equator, solar is really good year round. You go further north, you have possibilities of geothermal, hydroelectric, and there are a lot of different ways you can get power, and wind is my least favorite because I do think it's ugly. But you have these different capabilities, and part of it is just getting, they're more expensive than the way we have. It's getting those costs down, and that's one of the things people are like, why don't we just go all solar? Like, do you want to pay five times what you pay for electric right now? You
right.
know?
Well, so the problem is like at some point you run a wire far enough, and then you realize like that for cheaper than the wire to get from this dam all the way to here, you could just set up a photovoltaic locally, or set up geothermal, or set up whatever the local power supply is.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, at some point it becomes cheaper to ship coal in to just burn it right there.
Yeah, but, you know, and again, part of my pessimism in general is like, you know, like in Florida, we have abundant sunlight, but we've limited the growth of solar power companies because the power utilities have made it very, very restrictive, you know, and it's frustrating. Absolutely frustrating. You know?
The sunshine when we allow you to use it state.
Yeah, I mean, this is my father's been on the news quite a lot. I don't know if you saw the whole thing about the green slime off the coast of Florida.
Oh, no. I've totally missed this. How have I not heard of this?
So what this is they have this, the farming industry, and they have in the water system there in the lakes, they've built up a lot of like, you know, fertilizer or whatever. There's like satellite photos and stuff too. So you can see in Stewart, that's where my parents live. You see this, all this green slime, you know, all around the boats, everything else, which is killing off a lot of the local seagrasses and animals. And it's very, very bad. And what happened is Army Corps of Engineers decided to release water from like Lake Okeechobee, whatever, which is filled with fertilizer, which went through there and caused this humongous algae bloom.
Wow.
And the problem is that you have the sport fishing industry actually brings in more money than actually, like, you know, Big Sugar does and farming does. So it's been a very problematic thing where this was caused by Army Corps engineers decided to release water from there that we've known is polluted. We've known that has this in there. We've asked them not to do this. And it's become a big local water management issue. My father and my mom, you know, been very active in this. My father's been taking reporters out on his boat, you know, taking them, showing them all the, you know, the locations where this has been a problem at. And you know, it's been a problem for, you know, periodically for years. So,
yeah. And by the way, just for anybody listening, I think we've said this before, but Andrew's family, a very law and order family, very literally a family of you know, federal law enforcement agents, and his dad has been very active in local environmental causes. But I mean, just understand how serious it is. This is not, you know, just some, you know, random hippie cause. We have other friends that are random hippies that also get environmental causes. But Andrew's dad, a very by the book law and order guy that understands what, you know, is a for real, like, serious problem. And this has been a problem for
it's
a while.
It's not a, you know, he's not an earth firster sort of Greenpeace type person. This is my dad's a local fisherman, sport, you know, catch and release, very involved in conservation issues. And, you know, that's been a problem in the area, is that you have this very, you have kind of a tragedy of the commons where this fertilizer gets pushed out through there and it goes through there and it's, you know, more, you know, tourism. Florida's a very tourism heavy state. And the problem is that you have a lot of vested interest between Big Sugar and the farms and all that say, hey, we want uses that's water. We don't really want to have to treat it. And so, and there have been solutions there as far as what the government can do, as far as building stuff, but there's just been this inertia to do anything about it. So, you know, you have these algae blooms which go in there and kill the seagrass and, you know, make it so you can't catch
how,
fish.
How long is it expected that the algae blooms will continue to – because the blooms are an effect of artificially enriched fertilized water, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So as far as the – how long – I don't know. I don't know how long that lasts for. But also you have a problem where – it damages it and you rate it, you might have it go away, but then you've got to wait for the life to come back. And so you've got a bunch of different fish that nest there, that, you know, that spawning grounds, you know, you have, it's just, it's a very problematic thing on the entire ecosystem. So
interesting.
And it's where you can see satellite photos of this thing. You see it from, like, let's do algae bloom space or satellite.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. That's insane.
So, fun times.
Right on. So sorry, Florida. is the theme for today's episode.
Don't worry, guys. We'll be there next weekend to heal the land.
Yeah. We're going to be, man, it's a good time to segue into plugs and stuff. Both Justin and I are going to be out at CreateCon. Andrew, is there any way we can entice you out there?
What is CreateCon?
CreateCon is a one-day, we're not going to say it's meant to fill the Nerdtacular-sized hole in everyone's heart this year, but it is a one-day attempt to Band-Aid it this year in Orlando, Florida, put on by, I can never pronounce Garrett's last
Garrett,
name.
Garrett Weinzierl.
Weinzierl, there you go.
Of amove.tv. Primarily, it's a lot of video game podcasts, so a lot of Heroes of the Storm, a lot of Hearthstone, a lot of The Gamer's Inn. And then we were asked to kind of be the nighttime entertainment. So we will cap the night off with Night Attack. It takes place in downtown Orlando. And we very much hope that next Saturday, everybody who is in that area can come out and see us. And, you know, this is something that you know, it makes a lot more sense. And Andrew will certainly be sympathetic to the fact that, you know, downtown Orlando has always been a very, very weird place, in that a lot of tourists come into Orlando, but they usually wind up going to theme parks and they stay in hotels near the theme parks and then they go home. Downtown Orlando has always been in flux and has had good times and bad times, and especially considering, you know, what happened, you know, whatever, a month and a half ago, the horrifying tragedy down there. I for one, am very excited to be able to go back down there and dump some money into the local businesses, because, you know, that is a area that very, very easily can kind of wither and die and cost, you know, so many people beyond the horrifying tragedy, their livelihood. So I'm excited to go back down there and help do whatever small part we can to bring a little money to downtown Orlando.
Tickets are still available. If you go to bit.ly/createcon, CreateCon. It's an Eventbrite, and that's on the 30th.
Excellent. Do you guys have any picks?
I do. I'm late to this one. In fact, I believe I'm dead last out of the three of us.
What?
And it's not for a lack of interest, and it wasn't even a lack. I bought it. I bought it as soon as I could, and then didn't get around to it. But I am finally listening to Andrew Main's book, Name of the Devil, available Ooh. Right now on audible.com. And man, I had forgotten how much I enjoyed the world and the characters. And already at the beginning of Name of the Devil, I could tell that that I think I'll like this one even more because it deals so much more with Jessica Blackwood's family being in the magic business and, you know, the nature of, you know, what it's like to put on productions and I live for those little details, Andrew, that you get exactly right, that you could only know from having spent at least a decade in the magic biz. It's so great. I'm really enjoying it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, the Name of the Devil, if you liked, for whatever reason, if you liked the first Jessica Blackwood novel, I mean, so much bigger, so much you know, more global, literally, and so much so much more of everything that you love, including, yeah, you're right, Brian, the introduction of Jessica Blackwood's family is just
it's just too real. Exactly. It's so much. I know that guy. I know that tour. I know that you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Justin, you have a pick?
To be honest, my pick has been the only thing that I've been focusing on over the last week, which is what's it called? The coverage there on BitTorrent.
BitTorrent News. If you guys have not tuned in, you have been missing it. We've had bootleg streams available at diamondclub.tv. If you missed the news, Justin is a full-on news anchor covering the political maelstrom happening at the Democratic and Republican national conventions. Man, RNC, you didn't know what kind of turns out it's a random noise generator. The RNG is what it is. there was some amazing stories, and it was so good to tune in to BitTorrent News and see Justin dressed in a Charmander costume of following the story.
Yeah, by the way, I was wondering, I'm like, man, the RNC was so much news, and obviously you know, with the Trump campaign, they are a freewheeling campaign. I think that would be probably the best way to describe it. There was no shortage of stuff to talk about, including Ted Cruz's big thing. And there was this little delegate revolt that we were on top of, our attempted revolt, unsuccessful revolt that we were on top of from the very beginning. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I feel like this Democratic National Convention is just going to be kind of paint by numbers, but as I speak to you guys right now, I'm looking down at my press pass and it is incorrect. I might need to go get it corrected because it certainly says down here that my press pass is authorized by my former congresswoman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC chair, which is absolutely incorrect and invalid right now as she resigned because WikiLeaks started leaking internal emails from the Democratic National Committee during the primary, which went and got her booted out. This was a very, you know, resign so you don't get fired situation. So now certainly far more news than I was expecting. And man, am I excited to chop it all up for everybody.
You got to go to Drudge Report right now and look at the photo he chose.
Oh geez, I know one man in Miami doing a naked.
Oh my god! There's definitely a picture of a jackass on the front page.
A big donkey's butt.
Yeah,
and Drudge is a fascinating study, and probably worth you talking at some point on After Things about, you know, one person's ability to influence the news for better or for worse. You know. And his selection of images, you know, for a site that doesn't have officially commentary, the way he juxtaposes whatever images he wants to put over what point he wants across.
You're totally right. Like, to express your opinion through nothing but curation of other content, of aggregated content. You know, it's like you don't get to decide what comes down that pipeline. You can only decide in what order you will show it and which pieces you will highlight.
Yeah, he's oh man. I mean, there was a thing during the RNC last week where Alex Jones, who we had brought up earlier in the or in the show, confronted the a recording ran into the set of the Young Turks, which is another you know, big new media outlet. And you know, all I could think of is, I mean, those are two outlets for which politically I don't totally I don't agree with a lot from either. But you know, I was just kind of like, man, like why do we gotta fight each other, man? Like, why do the independents? Why do we gotta fight each other? Why aren't we starving the mainstream media stuff? Because you know, this is something that obviously we all have a tremendous vested interest is in, you know, independently created media entities, and that's certainly something that we hope to honor and continue to build on with BitTorrent News.
How did this Alex Jones Young Turks thing come to pass?
It was a real just a slap fight for no reason. Like, I don't know, it's super boring. Basically, Alex Jones says that he was asked on set. The Young Turks says he wasn't asked on set. They got on set and then they were both on camera, and then it turned into like a
barking dogs like, and yeah. My dog Sneakers and Kepler going at it. They're playing until basically, they're not playing anymore.
Except one of them was screaming about how, you know, Roger Stone, you know, was the biggest liar in media or something like that.
Okay. Although Sneakers does do that as well, but that's fine.
Yeah. He has strong opinions on Roger Stone. But anyway, yeah, so that's basically all I've been focusing on.
Well, I have a pick.
Good.
And it's been mentioned here before, but I am I'm gonna say that there should have been more enthusiasm on this pick.
It's Name of the Devil by me, Andrew Main.
Me. I mentioned it and I watched it and I fell in love. It was one of those, I'm just going to watch, you know, I'm going to watch one episode before I go to bed. Then the sun's up.
Yeah.
Stranger Things.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Well, I'm starting the fourth episode now, so I'm about halfway through. What is it that hooked you?
I was hooked in the first 5 minutes because it takes place in 1983. And so for Brian and I mean, this is a very nostalgia bomb decade for us.
Yeah.
When you have three goofball 12-year-old kids sitting around playing a D&D campaign and, you know, and all of what it's like to be 12, you know, all of what it's like to be, you know, that age at that point in life, the casting was phenomenal for the kids. The story hooked me in, you know, the way they said it's an 8-episode series. It's a standalone season. They could do a season 2 and pick up with characters and some themes, but they wanted to do a standalone story. And the thing I kept thinking about was there have been multiple attempts to try to do Stephen King type stories on TV and even films. And one of the things that I will say about Stephen King stuff is that often some of his most interesting stories never end interesting. They kind of, he's very good at throwing these things out there, but they never land.
Yeah.
And
he's great at tone, great at questions, not so great at answers and wrap ups.
That was a problem with Lost. That was a problem with a lot of stuff was like, what if, what if, what if? I thought this has been described as very Stephen King and Steven Spielberg-esque. Like if the early 1980s, these two got together to create, you know, combining their best skills to tell a story, that's very much what Stranger Things feels like, and openly so. And Stephen King, you know, had very high praise for it. They shot it cinematically. It doesn't look like TV. It looks like film. It's made by the Duffer Brothers, who wrote, and then they had they worked with his name escapes me. He's done some other really good stuff. Anyhow, it is a well-written, wonderfully casted, very engaging story. It's one of these things where there's a beginning, there's a middle, it has an ending. It's not, there's, you know, you're left with questions and stuff, but you follow the story of what you're set up with. The story they start off with, you get that story.
Yeah.
I just was so impressed with it. I don't want to overpraise it and have you people kind of go on and like, you made it sound like it was, you know, the new invention of cheese or whatever. But like, I loved it. My favorite things in the last year, Mr. Robot season one started a year ago, Mr. Robot and Stranger Things. You know, if you ask me to name the best TV or episodic format stuff I've seen it would, in the last couple of years, you know, Fargo, this, and Mr. Robot.
Have you dived into Preacher? I know we've discussed it on the show.
No, I want to. I will get into Preacher.
I think I hit the realization that it is my favorite show on television right now, awesome. Which I'm really surprised to come to that firm conclusion.
Yeah. I mean, I think Game of Thrones is like the best show ever, but that's been around.
Man, not years. This season. I really felt like I felt the loss of George R. R. Martin among the collaborators. And
man, you better knock it off before I light up some pyromancer fluid underneath your house.
That's dragon fire? Wildfire, that's what it was called.
Yeah, I mean, Martin like was in, you know, talking to the producers and writers, this is what I'm going to do and this is where we're going to go. And
if I was going to rank seasons, this one has been largely fulfillment on promises that were delivered long earlier. There has been some surprises, and the 9/11 episode of Game of Thrones was extraordinary. But I don't know.
I understood.
Like I don't want to die on this hill. It's just not been my favorite season.
Well, no, this is one of your things, though, Brian. I've come to love it. About you is that like you very much for somebody that hasn't grown up around like sports talk or like hot take radio, like you definitely always have these like, because this is always a thing with like Preacher for you where it's like I love Preacher, it's better than Game of Thrones.
I have to make it a con. So in other words, yes. Absent being a sports fan, I need something that exactly. gives me an opposite take from other people. There has to be winners and losers.
It's just like Preacher, better than Game of Thrones. And we'll take your calls after this note and pass your mattress.
Yes. Okay.
So I'm saying
you should be doing Hotline Monday instead of me.
Back to Stranger Things for a moment.
Sure.
I you know, my music tastes are all over the place, but I do have an affinity for 80s electronica and stuff. And there is nothing like watching a scene and all of a sudden they're playing a song from your Vangelis playlist.
Oh, that's great.
I have a Vangelis playlist.
I love the fact that all of Stranger Things doesn't really hit you over the head with its 1980s-ness. Like there are some very on the nose, like, oh, that is how it was. And that is a nice, like those moments of, you know, having a tethered phone that you were fingering the cord as you talk to someone and so on. But it wasn't a nostalgia for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah. And it wasn't like Mad Men where they kind of just sort of tried to rub those differences in your face sometimes a little too much.
Yes. Hey, misogyny, smoking. It was the 60s. Yeah.
I mean, I think,
well, Mad, you know, I think that there's, it's been very interesting when you've looked at like how people have wanted to handle that, because theoretically like Better Call Saul is a 90s period piece or early 2000s period piece that, you know, has touches of it, but could very well just take place before, during, or after,
sure,
you know, Breaking Bad, right? There are elements that are kind of stuck in time, and then there aren't. Similarly, I think the People versus O.J. Simpson did a very good job of, you know, Marsha Clark's a smoker, and she smokes inside of her office sometimes, but it's not like a big thing where somebody's like, man, one day they're going to ban this. You know?
And Stranger Things, like, you know, you're aware because, like, you see, like, oh, yeah, that's your life revolved around the telephone. You know, and the telephone at your house, you know, and did I get a message? Did the message come through? And that was how you were connected.
Yeah. And it was someone else's fault. Like, you didn't think to call, because if you were a kid and you were out till a certain time, there was no way for mom to get you. Like you just, yeah. you just yeah. had to answer for whether or not you thought to call mom during that time.
Yeah. So
I'm pumped to watch it.
It's a familiar plot. You're going to go like, I've seen elements of this before. And I totally agree. It's not the most, oh my God, I've never heard this sort of kind of premise before. The execution It's just fantastic. Well,
and the pacing's good too, because they set up a question, and so far most of the questions I've seen, I'm only halfway through, but like they, if they set something up at episode one, by episode three you're getting significant answers on it.
Yeah, one of the things that frustrated me so much about Lost was, like, talk about Stephen King, is like they had a bunch of what ifs, but there was no concrete reality. There was none. There was just this, we're gonna tell the Shaggy Dog story, and then we're just gonna tell, yeah, but it's how the story's told. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, maybe. You know. Gentlemen.
How's it been?
Weird. That was my goblin voice.
Oh, whoa, whoa! He's possessed!
Well, when I'm here with the coven, I like to end things with a nice little saying. It's been weird, y'all.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.